The following audio is from the Paradox Church in Fort Worth, Texas. More information about the Paradox Church is available online at theparadoxchurch.com.
The book of 1 Peter, chapter 3, verse 7. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered.
Let's talk. This text actually isn't just about husbands. And I'm gonna show you why in here in a moment, but it's actually about all godly men. It's about godly men and how we relate to all the women that are in our context, in our spheres, right, that are around us. And I'll show you why it's not just for husbands in a moment, but we have to consider that as we think about men and how they relate to women. So I turned 40 on Friday, okay? Y'all, 40, okay? And so that's happening for me. And so I've been reflecting a lot, and I've been a little bit emotional and a little bit, it's the end of the year anyways, so I do that anyways at the end of the year. And so I was thinking about this as I was preparing for this sermon and praying and things like that. Just, man, my first 20 years was learning how to receive, nurture, and care from a woman. Right, it was learning how to be loved by my mom and receiving that from my mother. And then it seemed like the past 20 years, my 20s to my 40s, 20s, you know, 20s and 30s, it has been just trying to figure out how to relate to women. Right? Who is this creature and how do you relate to them and what do they need and want and how does this work, right? That's what the 20s and 30s felt like. And so I was thinking, what are the next 20 years going to look like? I've got four of these creatures in my home, right? Four of these things called women in my home. What is the next 20 years going to be like? And I think the next 20 years needs to be spent making sure that the women around me flourish and feel safe in order to flourish. I think that's the call of a husband and of a father. It's certainly the call of a pastor as well. One of the feelings that I feel the most as a man, and maybe some of you men can resonate with this, the thing that I feel the most often, and this isn't a bad thing or a negative thing in any sort of way, but I feel heavy. Like I feel the weight of the gravity of the responsibilities that I have. That's what I feel. Like as a husband, as a dad, as a pastor, the majority of the time, if you were to ask me how I'm feeling, it would be this kind of low-grade, healthy weight of responsibility that I have because of the calling that we are called to as husbands and fathers and some of us pastors or ministry leaders as well. One author, he said that God created men with broad shoulders so they can carry a heavy weight. And I know it's not popular now in our culture at all to talk about any sort of distinction or difference between men and women. So the idea that we would have broads, you know, that whole concept and idea might immediately kind of rub up against just, you know, some of the ways in which you might think about all of this stuff. But I think that's biblical and right and good for a man to feel a little bit of a healthy weight about him. I think that's a good thing. And I've been convicted lately of just some immaturity that still needs to kind of get worked out of me. And I think in part because there's more weight that needs to come on me as I turn 40 and 41 and 42. And I've got these creatures in my home and I've got these, you know, this responsibility for how I relate to the women around me. And so I think that's a healthy thing. But here's the other thing. And here's where you come in. I think this is a historic moment, a historic time for men. I think that our culture needs men, godly men shaped by the gospel. I think our culture needs you more than ever. Because for a long time, we've dropped the ball. And for a long time now, things haven't gone well. And it's all coming to the surface. And everybody knows that we've failed. There's no more hiding anymore. Right, all the abuse of authority, all the abuse of kids, all the Me Too stuff, the stuff in the church that came up. Yesterday we had a class that was called, what was it called? Trauma. It was about trauma. It was about keeping kids safe at church. Right, that isn't women that are inflicting that trauma. And so our culture is begging, right? They're not begging, but they need it. A healthy, biblical men, right? Right now, it's just condemnation of men, and we deserve much of it. But the culture needs the men, right? It needs the men to be shaped by the gospel, empowered by the Spirit to be godly men. It needs men to wake up in the morning before the sun rises, to open up their Bibles, to get on their knees, and to be ready to do battle. That's what it needs, okay? That's what it needs. Now, I don't know how all of that looks or works. I don't have all of the answers for what that means. I don't even specifically know, and I don't even think the scriptures spell it out, what it means to be uniquely male in this culture right now. The idea is that we're to be uniquely male in this culture right now. That we are to do something about where we are at as a culture, and hopefully this sermon can get the ball rolling, at least in terms of how we relate to the women around us. This isn't just about your wives. It's primarily about your wives. I'll show you that. But we need to consider how we relate to the women around us so that men would take responsibility, they would sacrifice and bleed out first. I think that's what we're called to, okay? So let me show you this. Let me show you why I think this has more to do with your relationship with all the women around you, not just the wives. Let me show you what Peter says here in this one verse. He starts off again with this transition statement, likewise, right? Meaning there's a way in which a man has to submit as well, because he's talked about wives, he's talked about servants, he's talked about all of us as citizens submitting to the governing authorities. And so there's a way in which we are to posture ourselves to serve, even you could even call it a type of submission to the people around us, including the women and our wives around us as well. So likewise, husbands, live with your wives. I want to highlight this because that comes into play here. In an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as a weaker vessel. Okay, now that phrase, your wives, I'm going to do something here that you're never allowed to do if you're a preacher, but I'm going to do it anyways, okay? That's actually not in the Bible. Those two words, your wives, is not in the Bible. That is added by the translator. It's good that the translator added it. It clarifies what Peter is saying for sure, but it does make it so that if we're not careful, we think this verse only has to do with our wife, and it doesn't. Okay, here's the literal translation of the verse, the first part of the verse anyways. This is the order of it even. Live according to knowledge, or live with understanding, with the female as the weaker vessel. We'll talk about that. Showing honor to her even as the fellow heir of the grace of life. It doesn't say anything about a wife, okay? And this makes sense if we realize who Peter is writing to and what the genre of this section of his letter is. We said a couple of weeks ago that this is the household codes in 1 Peter. So household codes, these were these kind of code of ethics that the Greek philosophers would have for in particular men about how they are to treat certain people in different contexts. And so the New Testament writers, they adopt that idea and they change it and correct it where they need to apply to how God would teach us to treat and relate to the people around us. And so he's talked to servants already because they would be in the household, and wives already because they would be in the household. And so the household codes were about your whole household. And so that makes sense then that you would have in the household of these husbands, you would have servants, you would have his wife, you would have extended family. In this culture, it wasn't just you and your immediate family and your three-bedroom, two-bathroom house, right? This was you and you had a household and you were responsible for, you were the head of the house, okay? So this is a broader spectrum of relationship that Peter is talking about, not just with the wife, but with all the females in the house. I'll give you an example. So my wife and I have had women live with us over the years. So we had a homeless gal live with us for a little while. She was going to be homeless, and so we took her in for a little while. My mother-in-law lived with us for about a year. We've had two single gals in the church live with us for a year, and then 2 years, I think, was the last one. And so we've had women in our house, under our care, in our home for most of our marriage. And then we have a gal that comes once a month to help clean the house, like does the real deep stuff, right? The real cleaning. So let's just imagine like that I had more money and the gal that cleans the house lived with us, okay? And that my mother-in-law lived with us and that a single gal in our church lived with us. And so this verse would be instructing me in all of my relationships with all of them, right? With every female in my house, this verse applies to that. And it's fine that the translators add this phrase, your wives, for two reasons. One, he's writing to husbands, okay? And second, because he had just talked to the wives just before. And of course, the primary relationship that a husband would have with a female is his wife. And so that's fine that they add that, but it's not only that, okay? So we've got to talk. This isn't just about husbands with wives. We'll talk more about that as we go along, but this is more about how men relate to women. And so I want to talk about some stuff. Our world desperately needs Christian men to be Christian men in our world. Yes, they just do. And specifically, they need us to show the example of what it looks like to show honor to the woman. The world needs us to do that. And here's why. Here's the problem we have. And one problem is from the world, and one problem is from the church, okay? And the world's problem is that it overemphasizes our equality. The church's problem is that it overemphasizes our differences, okay? So two problems for why it's hard for Christian men to relate to women in the ways that we need to. In the world, it overemphasizes our equality. There is no difference in the world between men and women anymore. Just isn't, right? Maybe there's a few things different in our anatomies, but we can go and change those now. And that doesn't even determine your gender anyways. You can just be whatever you want. There's no differences anymore between male and female. They've overemphasized our equality. And so now there's nothing binary about us. Right? When God created in Genesis 1, everything is in binary. Everything is an opposite or an other. You have night and day in Genesis 1. You have the sea and you have the dry land, right? You have the heavens and the earth, all the way to where you get to day 6 and God creates another opposite pair, a male and female in his own image. Right? So God is creating these opposites. It goes all the way to Revelation where the new heavens and the new earth come down. And so all of that is part of God's creative order, that there would be differences, there would be opposites, there would be other. And if we don't have the other, right, for all the talk in our culture about diversity, and there's a lot of it, and that's a good thing, our culture has lost the first diverse relationship that God created, male and female. And we forget how to treat the other. We forget about, there's differences, and so maybe there's a way in which we're to look, there's a way in which we're to treat you, there's a way in which we're to interact together because of our differences, right? Diversity is beautiful, but when we lose it, we lose the opportunity to honor the otherness of others. How do we honor the otherness of others if we're overemphasizing our equality? I'll give you an example. If we are colorblind to other races, we're not going to see racism. Do you understand? If we're colorblind, you guys know, okay, white folk, you're not supposed to be colorblind. You're supposed to see other people's colors and cultures, okay? Because if we don't, then we can't celebrate the differences of how God has made us. And then we also don't get to see the injustices that are unique to the person because they are other. Does that make sense? So same thing with gender. If we miss out, if we're gender blind to other genders, we won't honor the differences in one another. And then we're also going to miss out on the unique suffering that the other gender faces. We're going to miss out on why maybe there's something uniquely suffering, with women. And because they're a woman, they're suffering in a specific way unless we recognize that there are some differences between us. And so if women are just like men with different body parts, then we're not going to relate to them in the way in which God designed. Does that make sense? So that's going to be a problem. So we can't learn from the world about its overemphasis on equality, but we've also been taught in the church something bad too. An overemphasis on our differences. The church, there's this weird overemphasis on our differences where it's like we're afraid of each other. We can't be in the same room. We can't have platonic friendships with one another. We can't disciple each other. I was doing a Q&A last week with some church leaders, and one of the guys asked me. He said, "How do you foster in the church more of a place for women to lead and to use their spiritual gifts?" It was a great question, and my answer is always the same. Firstly, foundationally, we need a paradigm shift completely about how we think about male-female relationships in the church. As if a man can't disciple a woman and a woman can't disciple a man, that is, you can't find that anywhere in the Bible. Okay, just for the record, there's no women's ministry in the Bible. There's no men's ministry in the Bible. There's none of that. There's none of that in the Bible, right? There's just practicing the one another as a spirit-filled people, right? As the whole body of Christ. And so we need to shift our thinking about that, right? The church is like a perpetual sixth grade dance sometimes. Okay? It's true. I have PTSD for my sixth grade dance. This gal, her name was Tiffany. She asked me to dance, and she was like 8 inches shorter than me. And she asked me to dance to the song. And if you're over 35, you'll know the song, November Rain by Guns N' Roses, which is 8 minutes long. Okay. Legit, like 8 minutes long, this song. And so for 8 minutes, I was dancing with, she was 8 inches, she was pulling me down because she was so short. Anyways, I have PTSD from, but that's what church is like. It's girls on one side and boys on another. Everybody afraid to interact with one another, for fear of, crossing some sort of unbiblical line that's not there. We have got to shift our paradigms with what that looks like. We're different, yes, but we're not that different. Right, guys, the gals in this church have something to offer you. They have something to offer you. They have been empowered by the Spirit of God, the same Spirit of God that raised Jesus from the dead. They have the same biblical capacity as you, the same theological capacity as you. They have the same mindset and understanding of the deep things of God. They have unique experiences, unique spiritual gifts. They can actually help you. And the job of the woman in the church isn't just to have babies and disciple children. It's true that you actually can be discipled by the whole church. Jesus even said that we have to be like little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. We actually are discipled by kids too. We've got to stop thinking that only two of the, that only the paid professionals, the two pastors or something on staff, are the ones that do all of the work that Jesus gave the church to with the Spirit. We're to be discipled by the whole church. And so women have a lot to offer us, and we've got to understand that, and we've got to have right relationships with them. We have to rightly be able to relate to them. The problem isn't that there's this, we should stay on opposite sides of the room. If you've got an issue with that, that's something that you have in your heart that maybe needs to get worked out. That's not our fault. You need to be discipled by the whole church. And when we lose, like where the world loses the diversity sometimes of men and women, the church loses kind of this, what Peter is saying here, this heirs with you, right? They are with us, heirs with us of the grace of life. And we lose that. And when we lose that, all sorts of dysfunctions come into play. Same thing with race. I'll use that as an example again. If we lose what is common about us in race, that's when you get racism. Like when you forget our sameness, right? We should celebrate the differences and celebrate the different cultures and all of that. But when we forget that they're human beings too, made in the image of God, then there's going to be racism. Same thing with sex or with gender. That if we lose what is common about us in gender, you're going to have sexism. Right? If you lose what is the same about us in our genders, the same capabilities, the same probabilities, the same whatever, right? Then you are going to fall into sexism. The church needs to celebrate both. Right? We need to relate to one another in all of our differences and all of our commonalities, and we are to do so in a way that shows honor. Okay? So, three things. He's going to say, this is for everybody. This is for men and how they relate to all women, especially the women in their spheres, and especially their wife, because that's their primary relationship. Three ways in which men are to relate to women, okay? Here's the first one. So remember our translation. Live according to knowledge, okay? That's the first one. Husbands, live in an understanding way, literally according or with knowledge. My wife loves to honor me and encourage me. But there's one thing that she has repeatedly had to encourage me in that I've struggled with over the years, and it's this idea of living with her in an understanding way. So, like, common refrain in my household for my wife when she's gently trying to help me and encourage me to grow in an area is her saying this very thing, that I need you to live with me in an understanding way. If you can imagine how, like, for whatever you know about me, it's really hard to be married to me, okay? I am a big personality. I am a big person. I am an Enneagram 8. I love to have things under my control. I think everything that I do is the best way in which it can be done. And it's just really hard. Much of her life is kind of swallowed up in mine. For 15 years, she has been married to a baseball player or a pastor. That's not good, girls, okay? I don't want that for my daughters. That's really, really hard. I've literally dragged her around the country. Not literally dragged her. I gotta be careful what I say here. She has gently come with me all over the country when I was playing baseball. Then we started a church. And so, man, this is not just a job, right? This is a life leading a church. And so that's dictated much of our lives. And so the point is that she could easily get lost in the shuffle, and she has. And for me, living with her according to knowledge, it means that I know her and that something actually changes in my life because of my knowledge of her. That I don't just do whatever I want because I typically just do whatever I want. Right? And she can get lost in that, but if I know her, if I'm living with her in an understanding way, I'm literally changing something for her sake. That's what that means. When you're in any sort of position of power or authority or headship or leadership, whatever it is, and all of us have that to some degree, you are given that, like that's biblically given to you in order to serve others. Power is given to you to bless others. You know that, right? Power's not bad. Whatever power you have is meant to serve others. And so as a dad and as a husband, my knowledge of my wife should dictate how I use my authority, how I use my power, how I use my life. My life is meant to serve her. That's what it's for. Okay, I'll give you an example of like a president, okay, because this should be easy for us to kind of consider in these days. But a president can't just do whatever he wants. The president has to live according to knowledge. Right? He has to understand what his people need and maybe even want because he was voted in by what they wanted. He has to govern according to knowledge. He can't just do whatever he wants, otherwise he's called something else. He's called a dictator. But some of you men are acting as dictators in your home, not living according to knowledge and changing anything. Some of you, you don't change anything for your wives. You don't change anything. Now, you'll be like, yes, yeah, Pastor, I do with some things. Yeah, but you don't care about those things. So yeah, she can pick where you guys go out to eat because you don't care. I'm talking about you want something, but you don't get it because you are living with her in an understanding way. The women around you are under your flourishing care. Not they are around you to serve what you want to do. Does that make sense? That's what it means by living with her in an understanding way. And that means you're a continual student of your wife and the women that are under your influence or care. And that's one of the best parts, man. I've been married 15 years. One of the best parts of being married is just that continual learning of your wife, watching her grow and flourish, exploring her. She's changing. There is so much to learn, right? When you get married and when you get to be with this gal, it's a big deal. And we get to continually get to know her all the more and learn her. And I think that goes the same for daughters and other women around you. I think you have to ask the question, how can I honor her according to what I know about her? How can I honor this woman because of what I know about her? Because that's what Peter here is saying that we're to do. We're to show honor to these women, right? We're to show honor to these females. That is what we are to do. And we need to know how to do that. Okay, so second thing. So we need to live with her in an understanding way. Second thing, he talks about this idea of the weaker vessel. Okay, back to our literal translation. Live according to knowledge with the female as the weaker vessel. Okay, this is one of those things in the Bible that you have to say what it isn't and also what it is, right? Because some of you gals, you've been taught this wrongly. Okay, so how many, I'll just ask you like, how many of you have heard, gals, that this means that you are like fine china? Okay? Have you heard this? Right? You are like fine china. You are fragile. And we only bring you out on Thanksgiving. And you're the weaker vessel. And so we don't want to break you, right? We don't want to break you. We put you back up safely on the shelf. And that's what this was. That's not what this means, okay? That's a little bit ridiculous. When people, most of the time when guys are teaching this, when it's usually guys that are teaching this, right? They forget who Peter, the context that Peter is writing to, speaks to this a lot. So I think this means two things. And one is probably more what Peter is emphasizing, okay? And there's a little bit of a clue here in what it means and what it doesn't mean. This word vessel is helpful for us. Why did he choose that? Why didn't he say the weaker person? Why didn't he say the weaker spouse? Why didn't he say, right? Why didn't he say something like that? He said weaker vessel. And every time in the New Testament that word vessel is used and is attributed to a human, it's always talking about their body. For example, 2 Corinthians 4:7, we have this treasure in jars of clay. That's the same Greek word as used in 1 Peter 3:7. It's talking about your bodies, right? There's a physicality to the vessel, okay? That's the picture that the New Testament writers are using, that we have limitations, that our physical body, is easily broken. That's what it's talking about. So when he says weaker vessel, he's talking about weaker physically. Okay, that there's an aspect of what he's speaking to that is pretty obvious, though it's still, you know, people in our culture don't like the sound of this at all, and maybe some of you, you know, struggle with this idea also, but it's just kind of a scientific reality. Okay, that the generally speaking, women are weaker physically than men are. It's why when women and men are competing in sports, they're competing in different leagues. It's why the fastest and strongest man will always be faster and stronger than the fastest and strongest female. That's just a reality to the way in which God has made us. And I realize that there are some women who are stronger than some men or faster than some men. I get that. There's probably some chick out there that knows jiu-jitsu, can take me down, my 6'3", 220 pounds. That's probably very, very true. I had two crushes growing up, okay? Two crushes. The first was Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell. I mean, amen. My apparently, like, that style, like, my wife's got some jeans that look like that style, and so when she wears them, I just say, call me Zach Morris, baby, because call me Zach, AC Slam, whoever she, yeah, whatever. So, second crush was in high school years. It was, you remember, if you're under 40, you won't know. Alias. You guys remember the show Alias, right? Jennifer Garner is she's Sydney Bristow, a double agent for the CIA, and she drops some fools every episode, right? Right? So that gal's probably out there. Sydney Bristow could beat me up, okay? She could. That's fine. I understand that. But generally speaking, I think we all realize and know that women are just by and large physically the weaker gender, the weaker sex, a man can certainly honor a woman by providing protection and safety. But I don't think that's what Peter mainly has in mind here. And I'll give you the reason why. I don't think that's uniquely Christian. I think an atheist naturally knows that an atheist man naturally knows that he should be a protective, safe place for the females that are around him. I think that an atheist man knows that that's part of what it means to be a man. I don't think that's what Peter is talking about specifically, or what he's emphasizing specifically here. I think what he's talking about is the gospel changing a man, forming a man, and changing him into something that interacts with females in a way that's different than the culture, okay? That's what 1 Peter is all about. In our various relationships, how does, in this historic moment that we're in, how does a man shaped by the life, death, and resurrection interact with the women around him? Okay? And so I think what he's referring to as the weaker vessel here is that in this culture, in this context that Peter is writing to, they were literally the lesser class citizen. That women in this context were just above, in the class system of that day, children and servants. And then there was women, and then there was men. Right? So the women, they were not considered. They had no voting rights. They were not. Their eyewitness account was not considered. Nobody cared what they saw. Okay, which by the way isn't all that different than our day and age when women are abused and raped and people don't believe them. Okay, so this is still happening. But they're a weaker vessel in the sense of they're not being valued in the context and culture in which they are in. And so Peter, what he's doing as a good pastor, he's looking out at the landscape of the culture they're in. He's looking back at his Bible and he's seeing where those things don't line up. How can we as spirit-filled, gospel-formed men go into the context, the culture, and bring about change? How can we be countercultural? There's something wrong with the way women are being treated in our context. It's our job now to treat them in a particular kind of way. They are the weaker vessel. Does that make sense? Okay? And so that's what we are to do as well. We are to look out at our world and consider how are women considered or devalued, maybe would be a better way to say it. How are they devalued? And so how can we show their value? That's what we are to do. That's what he's talking about. Peter's basically saying that we're to show the world how women will be honored. Right, so we give the world a taste of heaven. Hey, women, or hey, world, this is how women will be treated in heaven. Let me show you. That's what it's meant to do. Right, that's what we're supposed to do. Wherever the Bible and the way in which the world is treating women, that's the bridge. That's the gap we need to bridge. Okay, that's the man's job for the women that are in his direct context, near to him, in his proximity, okay? He's not talking about being weaker emotionally. That's not what he's saying. I know you've heard that. That's dumb, okay? There's no sign of that in the text, and there's no sign of that in just reality. If anything, women are stronger, better emotionally than men, right? That's just dumb. That's my biblical answer to that. It's stupid. He's not talking about being weaker spiritually. We know that because of this, right? The joint heirs with you, right? They're heirs with you. So this weaker can't mean that they are somehow, you know, a JV Christian. No, doesn't mean that. He's saying the world doesn't value your wife, so show the world how valuable your wife is. That's what he's saying. Okay? Because God values the woman. Do you know how valuable women are to God? The absence of a woman was the first thing that God said, oh, that's not good. That's not good. This is really good, all of it, but that is not good. Literally, do you realize, literally the last thing that God created was a woman. The apex of his creation, like his master plan, like he did it all and it was really good and he got to woman and it was very good. Yes? Yeah, that was the last thing that he created was a female. God honors and values the woman. And so we're talking about male-female relationships generally, but we do need to talk specifically about the husband-wife relationship because there's something unique about the husband-wife relationship that we desperately need in our culture as well that just the basic general male-female relationship can't give. There's something specific about the husband and the wife that no other relationship in the church can create, can show us. There's a picture, a portrait of what it portrays, and that is that the husband is to love the wife by laying his life down for her, just as Jesus loves the church. Right? So there's this unique picture of the husband and the wife that shows a picture of the gospel. It shows the world how much Jesus loves his bride when we love ours. When we honor our bride, right, the weaker vessel, when we show her value, when we show how valuable she is, how wonderful she is, we are painted picture of the truth that Jesus loves his church too. Jesus really loves his church. Jesus really loves his church. We are a broken and scarred and sometimes ugly bride, and yet Jesus honors us, values us, and loves us to the point that he poured out his life for us. And so husbands, when you won't die for your wife, you tell a lie about what the gospel is. You're telling a lie about what it means for God to rescue the world. We have a unique ability as husbands to our wives to paint a picture of the gospel where we would love her, lay down our life for her, and honor her and value her, especially where the culture doesn't value the woman, okay? And I think that's right now in her very unique, distinctive womanhood. I think that's her value in the church. I think that's a huge part of that. How can you help your wife flourish and use her gifts to serve in the church, because so many women have felt devalued in the church? What does that look like for you? That means you got to live with her in an understanding way. And so I think that's what he's talking about here with the weaker vessel, okay? And so men, the world needs us to be godly men more than ever, and it needs godly husbands to show the world how much Jesus loves his bride. Third thing, we are to honor her as heirs. So back to our literal translation here, we live according to knowledge. With the female, she's the weaker vessel. She's not valued in the culture that we're in. And so let's show honor to her, even as a fellow heir of the grace of life. Let's show honor even as a fellow heir in the grace of life. So here's what this means. Pen all of a sudden stopped working there. Sorry. Here's what this means. This goes all the way back to chapter 1, verse 4, where we are born again to an inheritance, right? That all of us as Christians, So all of us as Christians, we receive an inheritance, right? This goes all the way back to the first week of 1 Peter. That literally it's imperishable, it's undefiled, it's unfading. We get all that Jesus has bought for us, has got for us in the gospel. We get that. And so what that means then is that you are married into royalty. That you married a queen of the kingdom who is set to receive all the benefits of the kingdom. You should be amazed at the wife that you get to live with, this woman that you get to be around. You should be amazed at that, because she is going to receive an inheritance of like a firstborn son who would receive all of the benefits and all of the blessings of and privileges of the kingdom of God. And it goes all the way then back to verse 7 here as well, where our faith is tested and it's proven, right? We endure in our faith. It's found to result in praise, glory, and there's our word, honor. And so we're honoring the women around us. We're honoring our wives because they are sharing with us in the inheritance. And we honor her because she's going to be honored anyways, right? When Jesus comes back, praise, glory, and honor for her, for enduring, for taking part in the mission of God, for being a part of the ministry of the gospel, she's going to be honored anyways, and so we're just giving her a taste of heaven now when we honor her. Hey, baby, you're going to be honored in heaven for this work that God is doing in you and for your work that you are doing in the church and in our world and in this home and in our marriage. I want to honor you. Here's just a little foretaste of what you're going to get when you get to heaven and Jesus says, well done, good and faithful servant. And when we don't, that's so discouraging. And it's so hard to believe this kind of stuff, right? It's so hard to believe this hope stuff that we really, really need when things are really, really hard. When a church honors one another, right? Romans 12, we are to outdo one another in showing honor. When we are honoring one another, and men, when you honor the other women of this church, you are giving people a taste of heaven. The church should be a taste of heaven. The church should be a glimpse of what heaven will be like. And part of that is you lifting up and honoring the women of this church, okay? And Peter says, if we don't, or he says, do that. So here's a reason why we should do that. He says, so that, right? That's a big statement of purpose, right? So that your prayers may not be hindered. So I'll close with this idea. Peter, he's talking about prayer here, and it seems to come out of nowhere. But he's talked about prayer before, or he's going to talk about prayer in 1 Peter, and I think it gives us the clues to what he means here. He says in 1 Peter 3:12, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Meaning those who do evil, his ears aren't open to them. They're closed to them, right? And then in 1 Peter 4:7, the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded. And then there's this, for the sake of your prayers. So there's something about the way you act towards others that has to do with how God acts towards you. Isn't that interesting? There's something about the way in which you are relating to others that will also be how God is relating to you. And it makes sense because the Christian life is about loving God and loving others, right? And how we act towards God will affect how we act towards others and vice versa as well. And so it makes sense that if something is off in our relationships, something will be off in our relationship with God too. Or if something is off in a relationship with God, it's probably going to set something off in our relationship with others as well. And we don't want our prayers to be hindered because if our prayers are hindered, then we feel like God is distant and we begin to doubt. And sometimes your distance and doubt in God isn't theological or philosophical. It's actually just relational. That you have bitterness maybe or unforgiveness or you are mistreating a female in your midst and there's something fractured, broken now in your relationship with God. And it's not that God isn't there or God isn't true or you listen to a new podcast or read a new book. It's just that you won't forgive somebody. And it's affecting your relationship with God. And so in marriage or maybe with other women in your life, God's not going to listen to you if you won't listen to her. That's what this is saying. Have you noticed that God doesn't tend to stay on topic? We're in prayer, like you're asking him something and you're praying about something and then he tends to change the topic. A couple years ago, I was discouraged about some things in the church and really seeking God's face for some answers. And I remember a specific moment. I even wrote a blog post about it, but just this moment where I was asking God these big things for the church, and I need you to help me here and help me there. And I literally remember him, I just got this overall sense of him saying to me, "You were really harsh with Harper, my oldest. You were really harsh with Harper last night. Do you know why?" And I was like, no, we're talking about this, your mission in Fort Worth is at risk right now, God. This is a big deal. I need you to show me. And he's like, "No, you were impatient with her. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that." Yeah, that's more important. God's going to do that. My first responsibility is to the women around me, my wife, my daughters, other gals. And if there's something broken with that relationship, there's going to be something broken in my relationship with God as well. Prayer is intimacy with God, right? Prayer is intimacy with God. And if our intimacy or oneness is broken with our wife, our oneness is going to be broken with God. So here's how I want to close. I know many of you, I feel the same way, ill-equipped for what it looks like to be a biblical man in the context that we're in with the women around us. It already feels weighty enough. We're already trying to figure out being a dude and then being a husband for those of you that get married and then being a dad for those of you that are blessed with children. Some of you, God's going to call to be a pastor. That's an added weight and we need you, right? We need you. But that's the first thing we're going to look at is, are the women around you flourishing? The women under your care flourishing? Because that's the sign of a biblical man, especially in our context right now. We are in desperate, desperate need for men who are humble and gentle and strong and fierce and who are shaped by the scriptures and who wake up on their knees in prayer. That's what we need. And listen, the Father goes with you. You are not alone in this. I know that feels hard maybe, or you feel like, man, you didn't have the example, you didn't have the model, but you have a heavenly dad who really, 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 really loves you. And he's not disappointed when you mess up. He's a good dad. Some of you didn't have good dads. He's a good dad that's going to pick you up and he's going to brush you off. And he's going to say, come on, this is the way to go. Let's keep going. You're all right. You can do this. Come on, I'm with you. Let's go. And he's not going to be frustrated. That's what we need. We need a loving dad who has empowered us with a strong spirit and who has given us his son, a big brother, as an example. Men, we can do what God has called us to do, but we do need to do what God has called us to do. Now is the time. Nobody's asking for it. Right? They've given up on us, but the Spirit of God is in you. 1 John 2. He says, I write to you, young men, because you are strong and you have overcome the evil one. That is true about the Paradox Church men.